Chapter 60. That's the boat, apostrophe said one. And it's the same I saw this morning, apostrophe he returned. I came straight to it, by instinct, I suppose. Apostrophe, we said, no more as we approached the light, but made softly for the door. I laid my hand upon the latch, and whispering Steerforth to keep close to me, went in. A murmur of voices had been audible on the outside, and, at the moment of our entrance, a clapping of hands. Which latter noise, I was surprised to see, proceeded from the generally disconsolate Mrs. Gummidge. But Mrs. Gummidge was not the only person there who was unusually excited. Mr. Peggotty, his face lighted up with uncommon satisfaction, and laughing with all his might, held his rough arms wide open, as if for little Emily to run into them. Ham, with a mixed expression in his face of admiration, exultation, and a lumbering sort of bashfulness, that sat upon him very well, held little Emily by the hand, as if he were presenting her to Mr. Peggotty. Little Emily herself, blushing and shy, but delighted with Mr. Peggotty's delight, as her joyous eyes expressed, was stopped by our entrance, for she saw us first, in the very act of springing from Ham, to nestle in Mr. Peggotty's embrace. In the first glimpse we had of them all, and at the moment of our passing from the dark cold night into the warm light room, this was the way in which they were all employed. Mrs. Gummidge in the background, clapping her hands like a madwoman. The little picture was so instantaneously dissolved by our going in, that one might have doubted whether it had ever been. I was in the midst of the astonished family, face to face with Mr. Peggotty, and holding out my hand to him, when Ham shouted, Master Davy! It's Master Davy! Apostrophe, in a moment we were all shaking hands with one another, and asking one another how we did, and telling one another how glad we were to meet, and all talking at once. Mr. Peggotty was so proud, and overjoyed to see us, that he did not know what to say or do, but kept over and over again shaking hands with me, and then with Steerforth, and then with me, and then ruffling his shaggy hair all over his head, and laughing with such glee and triumph, that it was a treat to see him. Why, that you two gentlemen road should come to this here roof tonight, of all nights in my life, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, is such a thing as never happened afore, I do rightly believe. Emily, my darling, come here. Come here, my little witch. There's Master Davy's friend, my dear. There's the gentleman as you've heard on, Emily. He comes to see you, along with Master Davy, on the brightest night of your uncle's life as ever was or will be, Gorm the Tother One, and horror for it. Apostrophe, after delivering this speech all in a breath, and with extraordinary animation and pleasure, Mr. Peggotty put one of his large hands rapturously on each side of his niece's face, and kissing it a dozen times, laid it with a gentle pride and love upon his broad chest, and patted it, as if his hand had been a lady's. Then he let her go. And as she ran into the little chamber, where I used to sleep, looked round upon us, quite hot and out of breath with his uncommon satisfaction. If you two gentlemen rode now, and such gentlemen apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty. So thr. Apostrophe cried Ham. Well said. So thr. Master Davy bore gentlemen rode, so thr. Apostrophe, if you two gentlemen road, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, don't excuse me for being in a state of mind, when you understand matters, I larks your pardon. Emily, my dear, she knows I'm a-going to tell, apostrophe here his delight broke out again, and has made off. Would you be so good as look arter her, Mother, for a minute? Apostrophe, Mrs. Gummidge nodded and disappeared. If this ain't, apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, sitting down among us by the fire, the brightest night o' my life, I'm a shellfish biled too, and more I can't say. This here little Emily, sir, apostrophe in a low voice to Steerforth, apostrophe her as you see a blushing here just now apostrophe, Steerforth only nodded. but with such a pleased expression of interest, and of participation in Mr. Peggotty's feelings, that the latter answered him, as if he had spoken. "To be sure," apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty. "That's her, and so she is." "Thank ye, sir," apostrophe, Ham nodded to me several times, as if he would have said so too. "This here little Emily of ours," apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, "has been, in our house, what I suppose I'm a ignorant man, but that's my belief, no one, but a little bright-eyed creature can be in a house. She ain't my child, I never had one, but I couldn't love her more. You understand? I couldn't do it." "Apostrophe, I quite understand," apostrophe said Steerforth. "I know you do, sir," apostrophe returned Mr. Peggotty, "and thank ye again. Master Davy, he can remember what she was. You may judge for your own self what she is, but neither of you can fully know what she has been, is, and will be, to my loving art. I am rough, sir," apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, "I am as rough as a sea porcupine. But no one, unless, mayhap, it is a woman, can know, I think, what our little Emily is to me. And betwixt ourselves," apostrophe sinking his voice lower yet, "that woman's name ain't Miss Sis Gummidge neither, though she has a world of merits." Apostrophe Mr. Peggotty ruffled his hair again, with both hands, as a further preparation for what he was going to say, and went on, with a hand upon each of his knees. "There was a certain person as had knowed our Emily, from the time when her father was drownded, as had seen her constant, when a babby, when a young gal, when a woman. Not much of a person to look at, he warned," apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, "something o' my own build rough a good deal o' the sou'wester in him worry salt, but, on the whole, a honest sort of a chap, with his heart in the right place." Apostrophe, I thought I had never seen Ham grin to anything like the extent to which he sat grinning at us now. "What does this here blessed tarpaulin go and do?" apostrophe said Mr. Peggotty, with his face one high noon of enjoyment, "but he loses that there art of his to our little Emily. He follers her about, he makes hissel face or no servant to her, he loses in a great measure his relish for his wittles, and in the long run he makes it clear to me what's amiss. Now I could wish myself, you see, that our little Emily was in a fair way of being married. I could wish to see her, at all events, under articles to a honest man as had a right to defend her. I don't know how long I may live, or how soon I may die, but I know that, if I was capsized, any night, in a gale of wind in the Yarmouth roads here, and was to see the town lights shining for the last time over the rollers as I couldn't make no head against, I could go down quieter for thinking there's a man ashore there, iron true to my little Emily, God bless her, and no wrong can touch my Emily, while so be as that man lives." Apostrophe, Mr. Peggotty, in simple earnestness, waved his right arm, as if he were waving it at the town lights for the last time, and then, exchanging a nod with Ham, whose eye he caught, proceeded as before. "Well, I counsels him to speak to Emily. He's big enough, but he's bashfuller than a little un, and he don't like. So I speak. What? Him? Says Emily. Him that I've knowed so intimate so many years, and like so much. Oh, uncle, I never can have him. He's such a good fellow. I gives her a kiss, and I says no more to her than, my dear, you're right to speak out, you're to choose for yourself, you're as free as a little bird. Then I aways to him, and I says, I wish it could have been so, but it can't. But you can both be as you was, and what I say to you is, be as you was with her, like a man. He says to me, a shaking of my hand, I will. He says. And he was honorable, and manful for 2 year going on, and we was just the same at home here as afore." Apostrophe, Mr. Peggotty's face, which had varied in its expression with the various stages of his narrative, now resumed all its former triumphant delight, as he laid a hand upon my knee, and a hand upon Steerforth's, previously wetting them both, for the greater emphasis of the action, and divided the following speech between us. All of a sudden, one evening as it might be tonight, comes little Emily from her work, and him with her. There ain't so much in that, you'll say. No, because he takes care on her, like a brother, arter dark, and indeed afore dark, and at all times. But this tarpaulin chap, he takes hold of her hand, and he cries out to me, joyful, look here. This is to be my little wife. And she says, half bold and half shy, and half a laughing, and half a crying, yes, uncle, if you please, if I please. Apostrophe cried Mr. Peggotty, rolling his head in an ecstasy at the idea. Lord, as if I should do anything else. If you please, I am steadier now, and I have thought better of it, and I'll be as good a little wife as I can to him, for he's a dear, good fellow. Then Mrs. Gummidge, she claps her hands like a play, and you come in. Fear. The murder's out. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Peggotty, you come in. It took place this here present hour, and here's the man that'll marry her, the minute she's out of her time. Apostrophe, Ham staggered, as well he might, under the blow Mr. Peggotty dealt him in his unbounded joy, as a mark of confidence and friendship. But feeling called upon to say something to us, he said, with much faltering and great difficulty, she warn't no higher than you was, Master Davy, when you first come, when I thought what she'd grow up to be. I see her grown up gentleman like a flower. I'd lay down my life for her, Master Davy, oh. Most content and cheerful. She's more to me, gentleman, than she's all to me that ever I can want, and more than ever I could say. I love her true. There ain't a gentleman in all the land, nor yet sailing upon all the sea, that can love his lady more than I love her, though there's many a common man would say better what he meant. Apostrophe, I thought it affecting, to see such a sturdy fellow as Ham was now, trembling in the strength of what he felt for the pretty little creature who had won his heart. I thought the simple confidence reposed in us by Mr. Peggotty and by himself, was, in itself, affecting. I was affected by the story altogether. How far my emotions were influenced by the recollections of my childhood, I don't know. Whether I had come there with any lingering fancy, that I was still to love little Emily, I don't know. I know that I was filled with pleasure by all this. But, at first, with an indescribably sensitive pleasure, that a very little would have changed to pain. Therefore, if it had depended upon me to touch the prevailing chord among them with any skill, I should have made a poor hand of it. But it depended upon Steerforth, and he did it with such address, that in a few minutes we were all as easy, and as happy as it was possible to be. Apostrophe, Mr. Peggotty, apostrophe, he said, you are a thoroughly good fellow, and deserve to be as happy as you are tonight. My hand upon it. Ham, I give you joy, my boy. My hand upon that too. Daisy, stir the fire, and make it a brisk one. And Mr. Peggotty, unless you can induce your gentle niece to come back, for whom I vacate this seat in the corner, I shall go. Any gap at your fireside on such a night, such a gap least of all I wouldn't make, for the wealth of the Indies. Apostrophe, apostrophe, so Mr. Peggotty went into my old room to fetch little Emily. At first little Emily didn't like to come, and then Ham went. Presently they brought her to the fireside, very much confused, and very shy, but she soon became more assured, when she found how gently and respectfully Steerforth spoke to her. How skillfully he avoided anything that would embarrass her, how he talked to Mr. Peggotty of boats, and ships, and tides, and fish, how he referred to me about the time when he had seen Mr. Peggotty at Salem House, how delighted he was with the boat and all belonging to it, how lightly and easily he carried on, until he brought us, by degrees, into a charmed circle, and we were all talking away without any reserve. Emily, indeed, said little all the evening, but she looked, and listened, and her face got animated, and she was charming. Steerforth told a story of a dismal shipwreck which arose out of his talk with Mr. Peggotty, as if he saw it all before him, and little Emily's eyes were fastened on him all the time, as if she saw it too. He told us a merry adventure of his own, as a relief to that, with as much gaiety, as if the narrative were as fresh to him as it was to us, and little Emily laughed until the boat rang with the musical sounds, and we all laughed, Steerforth too, in irresistible sympathy with what was so pleasant and light-hearted. He got Mr. Peggotty to sing, or rather to roar, when the stormy winds do blow, do blow, do blow. And he sang a sailor's song himself, so pathetically and beautifully, that I could have almost fancied that the real wind creeping sorrowfully round the house, and murmuring low through our unbroken silence, was there to listen. As to Mrs. Gummidge, he roused that victim of despondency with a success never attained by anyone else, so Mr. Peggotty informed me, since the decease of the old one. He left her, so little leisure for being miserable, that she said next day she thought she must have been bewitched. But he set up no monopoly of the general attention, or the conversation. When little Emily grew more courageous, and talked but still bashfully, across the fire to me, of our old wanderings upon the beach, to pick up shells and pebbles, and when I asked her if she recollected how I used to be devoted to her, and when we both laughed and reddened, casting these looks back on the pleasant old times, so unreal to look at now, he was silent and attentive, and observed us thoughtfully. She sat, at this time, and all the evening, on the old locker in her old little corner by the fire am beside her, where I used to sit. I could not satisfy myself, whether it was in her own little tormenting way, or in a maidenly reserve before us, that she kept quite close to the wall, and away from him, but I observed that she did so, all the evening. As I remember, it was almost midnight when we took our leave. We had had some biscuit and dried fish for supper, and Steerforth had produced from his pocket a full flask of Hollands, which we men, without a blush, had emptied. We parted merrily, and as they all stood crowded round the door, to light us as far as they could upon our road, I saw the sweet blue eyes of little Emily peeping after us, from behind Ham, and heard her soft voice calling to us to be careful how we went. A most engaging little beauty. ... said Steerforth, taking my arm. Well, it's a quaint place, and they are quaint company, and it's quite a new sensation to mix with them. ... How fortunate we are to, I returned, to have arrived to witness their happiness in that intended marriage. I never saw people so happy. How delightful to see it, and to be made the sharers in their honest joy, as we have been. ... That's rather a chuckle-headed fellow for the girl, isn't he? ... said Steerforth. He had been so hearty with him, and with them all, that I felt a shock in this unexpected and cold reply. But turning quickly upon him, and seeing a laugh in his eyes, I answered, much relieved. Ah, Steerforth. It's well for you to joke about the poor. You may skirmish with Miss Dartle, or try to hide your sympathies in jest from me, but I know better. When I see how perfectly you... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.